KPFA and KPFB Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno.
Again, these are all straw polls until we take the final vote on the whole package.
Yes,
right?
Straw poll to approve.
Let me read this aloud again so everyone would know. That members shall have the right, this would be the language that would go into the bylaws, members shall have the right to add agenda items to the local station board meetings for discussion at the following meeting, either by the written request of 12 members in attendance at that meeting or by 20 members' signatures on a petition.
Okay.
Okay?
Can we vote on it?
All those support that. Please raise your hand. One, two, three, four. And all those who don't support that, post it. One, two, three, four, five, six. Okay, so it doesn't carry. Okay. What about the other items here? G, H, I, J, K.
I can't see them, so could you synopsize them?
Okay, I'll do them again. Members shall have the right to have local station board meetings recorded and available to the members from the Pacifica Archives and shall be archived on the station website. That's one. Two is members shall have the right to a monthly broadcast report to listeners by the local program council. I'm not going to editorialize. Next is members shall have the right to fundraising reports, including the total raised by the event, costs, and net proceeds to be available on the station website in a timely manner. Next is members shall have the right to have the station budget, including salaries to the extent permitted by law, made available on the station website in a timely manner. And finally, members shall have the right to have a regular monthly local program of unscreened call-ins on one, programming issues, and two, any other topic the caller wishes to discuss. If I could say something, if I could call myself a second.
Please do.
I think some of these are not actually issues that are about members' rights.
Exactly.
I think that minutes of meetings, for instance, should be posted for anybody to see, whether you're a member or not. I think that financial reports should be public documents, whether you're a member or not. Yeah, it should be public information. So I don't think these should be in the bylaws.
Yeah.
I also think that the bylaws should not be mandating programming. I think that's inappropriate for the bylaws to be mandating programming. I do think that there should be programs. I think the local station board should have a program, a monthly program or whatever gets worked out. That's my personal feeling. But I don't think that's a bylaws issue. I think that's inappropriate. So I actually, none of these jump out at me as things that I would vote for inclusion in the bylaws. Bye.
What I synthesize from what our rights are these. Foundation members, you're a member of the foundation. Okay, what do I have a right to do or have or be when I become a member? You have the right to vote for directors, correct? Can we agree on that?
Mm-hmm.
That if you're a member, you should have the right to vote for directors.
Right.
Well,
you should have the right to become a director. Right? Okay. You should have the right to access all foundation records.
Right.
Okay. And sit on foundation committees. Okay, those are the four things that I synthesize. That, you know, for a given person, that's what that person has an unassailable, quote, right to do as a member. Now, if there are other things, now we all agreed on those, so that was two sentences under my thing. Now, if there are other things that are essential that a person be who is a, quote, member should do, then let's synthesize that out of whatever we have. But if we can agree that those four things are the minimum four things that we can agree on, well, then that's the basis right there.
Carol? Well, I don't agree that members have all of those rights. I don't think members have the rights to all foundation, open access to all foundation documents. There are many, 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 many documents that are simply confidential business documents.
Well, my conception of a member was different from yours, but, you know.
that, you know, we're not going to open up all of our file drawers to any member who comes in the office. That's just not appropriate. But I think that we did agree two board meetings ago that board members or that members have access to the membership list for any legitimate purpose, such as communicating with other members. If they want to communicate with members, they can, if it has to do with their membership rights. What else did we agree?
I don't remember.
But no, I don't think members have the right to access to all of our files. And I also don't think every member has a right to sit on every committee. That a local board can establish a committee and open it up to public participation. But there might be other committees of the local board that need to deal with confidential issues, such as hiring committees or litigation committees or things like that. So if you make blanket statements about rights, you're implying more than is actually the case, I think.
Okay, Rob?
Carol, I really don't recall that we said that the membership lists would be freely available to everybody. And I think if they are, that we're going to be asking for abuses beginning with the election.
Excuse me, Rob. Under the law, they are available for any legitimate membership purpose. That the law provides that members can have access to the membership list for any legitimate purpose of to do with their membership. They can't have access to the membership rolls to send them solicitations for other things, but if they want to communicate with other members, that's the law.
Well, based on what I'm hearing, there's only two things you agree on. A member should have the right to vote for directors, and the member should have the right to run for directors. Is there a disagreement on those?
I didn't understand.
Members have a right to vote for foundation directors, and members have a right to become foundation directors.
If elected.
Right. Teresa, did you have a question?
No.
Well, let me just go back to the items. I just want to be clear that the items F through K on page 6. My sense was that there was agreement that we didn't want to add any of those, right? Does anybody want to argue otherwise? No. Okay, so we're not adding any of those. Now there's the formulation that Jabari just had, that members have the right... Say it again, Jabari. I'm sorry. Members have the right to be elected.
To vote for the foundation directors and become foundation directors.
Yeah. Well, we've actually adopted a different system already. The members are not voting for the election of directors. The members are voting for the election of delegates. Those delegates are the local station board members who elect the directors on behalf of the members.
But that's under that model.
Right.
What's the difference between... Okay, now I see in your model you have delegates and members are people who just pay money and or donate, you know, time, and then these people elect, quote, delegates, and the delegates elect the directors. So you've got this layer approach. So under my model, you're a member of the foundation. If you're a member of the foundation, you have certain rights. And so, but even under that, okay, fine. You still have to define under your model what do members have a right to do. So under your model, what I'm hearing you saying, you have a right to vote for a delegate, and you have a right to become a delegate. Under your model.
And you have a right to recall.
Yes.
Right.
Under the rights of the members are to vote for the election of delegates, to vote for the recall of delegates or electors, the right... To vote for the approval of bylaws, amendments to bylaws, and amendments to the articles of incorporation.
To acquisition of the property.
And we've already given them the right to... See, we didn't put it under a set of rights. We went to different segments of the bylaws and said, this is how you amend the bylaws. This is how you recall a director. This is how you elect a, a delegate. This is how you recall a delegate. Those were the rights of the members when we went to specifying how you did different things. So I don't even think we have a list of rights.
See, that's why I did this, because I asked the question back in Houston, what is a member? And the question was, well, you're either paid or staff, or you're either listener or you're paid. That didn't answer the question of what is director. That said, these are the classes of memberships. Okay, it didn't define what a member was. And the first thing I did is define what these things are. And to my definition of a member, it said a member of the foundation is a natural person who has the right to vote for directors of the foundation board and is eligible to become a member of the foundation board. Plain and simple. If you have those rights, you're by definition a member. It doesn't say anything about class. And what I'm trying to get you to say is, if you got these, you got a member who is a person who donates money, but what does this person have a right to do? What I'm hearing you say is that a person who can donate money has a right to vote for delegates and run for delegates.
We stopped it then on page 4 of the composite piece that Rob put together.
The
listener sponsored members of a radio station shall have the right to elect delegates to sit on the local station board, and then the staff members have the right to elect delegates. We have addressed what those rights are. We did it in a different way than you're doing it, but
right. So I'm asking, what more do you need? If what more do you need to put for your conceptualization of a member? That's what I
don't think we need to do anything else.
I agree with you.
Right. So I'm done with that. I thought we did it. We defined it. So
I'm agreeing with you.
Okay. Excellent. So let's talk about it for another 20 minutes. Okay. We're fine. Okay, so then the other issue is amendments. The amendments of the bylaws.
But, hold. You now, under your model, you need to define the rights of delegates.
Well, I think we define...
Because delegates are different than members. Because
we define
they have
the
different
functions of the local station boards.
The rights and duties.
Well, hold it. Rights and duties are separate. But you need to define the rights of delegates because they're different from members.
Well, again...
And from your model, the rights of delegates that I can think of, the delegates are the people who have the right to vote for directors and the right to become directors.
Yes.
Yes, Jory, I observed in your our proposed articles or bylaws that definition, and it struck me as sort of like saying defining something by what it is. Certainly a member is somebody who has the right to elect a director. The point is, what do sponsors have the right to do? And it's somewhat circular, no offense. What I'm getting at is that the proposed bylaws so far, as developed by the straw polls, amply identify what a member is. And it does, I believe, do the job. To add what you're saying, frankly, is not accurate in relation to what the rules have proposed. In other words, members, you're not a member simply by virtue of the fact of your ability to, for example, elect a director. If you're electing a delegate, you're electing a delegate. Arguably, a delegate then elects a director, but nonetheless, you're still a member, and those bylaws say that. Furthermore, if you have the right to pass on the amendment or the dissolution of assets, you're a member. So there's a lot of ways you can define being a member, not just the ways that you propose. I would argue strenuously that to add additional language to finding a member is just gilding the lily and frankly confusing.
I haven't added any member. All I said was that what currently is defined as a member is somebody who gives a certain amount of money and donates a certain amount of time. That's already what is on the table. I didn't define that. That's what's on the table.
Well, what are you proposing? I mistook it then.
No, I'm saying you define... Okay, I wasn't defining what a member is. We were on the issue of rights of a member. We've already established what the rights are. Now I'm saying now you got to establish what the rights of delegates are, because delegates are different from members.
The duties are set forth in the proposed bylaws.
Well, I'm saying you got to define the rights, duties, and authorities of members, of delegates now.
No, you don't.
Well, delegates
you have to define the duties and authorities
indeed,
okay, not the rights.
Let's get a sense of where we are. Do we want to continue this discussion? I feel like we're just going in circles.
I don't think it's pertinent to anything.
And I would like to move the agenda. There is the issue of the amendments of the bylaws. How do we amend the bylaws? That is still before us. I should also say there is this emergency bylaws provision in here that we never discussed.
I deleted it in mine because it's unnecessary.
Yeah, I think it's unnecessary too. sorry, if we've been attacked by nuclear weapons, then we've got bigger problems than...
If we get attacked by nuclear weapons, we failed in our mission pretty miserably.
Can we move to Article 17?
I would move that we strike that article for emergency.
Okay, that's Article 14 in the composite that we got at the Houston meeting that Rob put together. It's Article 14, page 20, emergency bylaws, and there's a motion that we strike that whole section. Is there a second?
Strike the whole article.
That whole article.
Dave seconded.
Discuss it further, or can we move right to a straw poll on it? Okay, what it is, I'll read it. It's Article 14, emergency bylaws, reviewing the bylaws. Section 1, when operative. The emergency bylaws provided herein shall be operative during any emergency in the conduct of the purposes of the foundation resulting from an attack upon the United States of any nuclear, biological, or atomic disaster, notwithstanding any different provision in other paragraphs of these bylaws, in the Articles of Incorporation, or in the statutes governing nonprofit corporations. To the extent not inconsistent with the provision of this Article 14, the other provisions of the bylaws shall remain in effect during such emergency, and upon its termination, these emergency bylaws shall cease to be operative. Section 2, events of emergency. During any such emergency as described in Section 1, the following action shall be taken. 1. A meeting of the Board of Directors may be called by any officer or director of the Foundation. Notice of the time and place of the meeting shall be given by the person calling the meeting to such of the directors as it may be feasible to reach by any available means of communication. Such notice shall be given at such time in advance of the meeting as circumstances permit in the judgment of the person calling the meeting. 2, at any such meeting of the Board of Directors, a quorum shall consist of any 10 directors, 9 directors and one officer, or any 5 officers. 3, the Board of Directors, either before or during such emergency, may provide and from time to time modify lines of succession in the event that during such an emergency any or all officers or agents of the Foundation shall for any reason be rendered incapable of discharging their duties. And 4, the Board of Directors, either before or during such emergency, may effective in the emergency change the head office or designate several alternative head offices or regional offices or authorize the officers to do so.
In a shelter or something.
Et cetera. Do I have to read the whole thing?
No.
Right. And so there's a proposal before us that we strike this article about emergency bylaws. Is there a second?
I second it.
Okay. There was a second. To strike Article 14. Okay, all in favor of taking out Article 14? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm sorry. I didn't ask for a discussion. I'm sorry. Inappropriate call to the vote. Is there comments? You want to discuss it, David?
No, I'm
backing up for a second. Is there a discussion? Carol.
I think it's wise to leave it in. I hope and pray that it would never need to be invoked, but I think it is possible that in the state of the world, it could be necessary to invoke, and whoever was still living might actually want to operate the foundation legally with some authority for as long as they lived.
Under martial law, I don't think that'd be an issue.
What?
This doesn't say who's running the bylaw. This doesn't speak to that question.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
The emergency, what does it say?
It just says you can convene a meeting.
Yeah, well, you can convene a meeting
which
to conduct business.
Move the head of his own.
Okay, are there any comments? Okay, can we move to a vote? All those in favor of striking this Article 14, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All is opposed. Okay, 2. So we're striking it. Okay. Now, Article 17, which is on page 22.
Which is not 16.
Is amendments of Articles of Incorporation and Bylaws. I'll just read it real quickly. Section 1, Amendment of Bylaws. A, power to amend. These bylaws may be amended, altered, or repealed in whole or in part by the members. Amendments may be proposed by a two-thirds majority vote of the National Board of Directors or of a local station board, or by a petition signed by 100 members. The proposed changes shall be submitted to the members of at least six. The proposed changes shall be submitted to the members at least 60 days in advance of the annual election, and shall appear on the annual ballot. Announcements of the proposed bylaws changes shall be broadcast by all stations frequently during the notice period prior to the annual election. B, voting and ratification. In order to be adopted, any proposed bylaws amendment must receive the vote of 3/5 of the members voting, providing that a quorum of members actually votes. Section 2, Amendment of Articles of Incorporation. A, proposing amendments. Amendments to the Articles of Incorporation may be proposed by 2/3 majority of the Board of Directors or by a petition signed by 100 members. B, approving amendments. Any amendments to the Articles of Incorporation proposed by the Board of Directors shall be presented to the members of the Foundation by mail ballot and shall require approval of 3/5 majority of a quorum of the members. Any amendments to the Articles of Incorporation proposed by the Board of Directors shall be presented to the members of the Foundation and must be approved by the affirmative vote of 2/3 majority of the votes. Wait, how is this different? Isn't this just the same thing?
Change from 3/5 to 2/3.
I guess there were two options. One that would be 3/5, one that would be 2/3. But the thrust of this is that any amendments to the Article of Incorporation have to be voted on by the membership, whatever the threshold is. Right. And then finally, Section 3 of Bylaws Convention, no later than April 2004, the National Board of Directors of the Pacifica Foundation shall hold the Bylaws Convention to review and revise the Foundation bylaws. The members shall vote to ratify the revised bylaws sections. George.
Madam Chairlady.
We're going from bad to worse.
A quorum of the members. And this is going to be voted by all the members. Members, period. What's a quorum of all of our members?
I
believe it's 10%.
I think it was 10%. It's on page 5. Quorum. For purposes of any election or written ballot, a quorum of the list of responsible members shall be 10% of those entitled to vote. And a quorum of the staff members shall be 1/3 of those entitled to vote as of the applicable record date. It's page 5.
Okay.
David and then Jabari.
If I might, the fact that you can amend the corporation, amend the articles of incorporation, and thereby amend the way by which the articles can be amended, I believe warrants a special provision, as Rob was generous to mention in his revision, that was worth considering. That is to say, you can amend the bylaws, but in order to amend that part of the bylaws which permits amendment of the articles of incorporation requires a higher threshold. Otherwise, if you have...
I'm sorry, David, I lost
to, you. To prevent the abuse of the... If it takes, for example, 75% vote to amend the Articles of Incorporation in the bylaws, but you can amend the bylaws to change that at a lower threshold, then you really deleted effectively or rendered meaningless the higher threshold. And I think we really need to protect the Articles of Incorporation. I would recommend that we put wording into any proposal relating to the amendment of bylaws, which provides that the bylaws be amended as provided, except that any bylaw change altering that portion, any bylaw change that allows for the altering of the articles requires, for example, a 75% vote. Protect those articles.
Okay.
Super.
Tarari was next. Carol.
I just want to say that I basically took this article and cleaned it up a lot. Basically kept the same thing, except bylaws convention. I didn't put any date, eight date beside it. I just said that the board of directors of the Pacifica Foundation may convene a bylaws convention to review and revise the foundation bylaws. So basically, it can be done. I didn't think you had to make it date specific. But I think the issue Dave is raising is, I mean, to me, what I hear him saying, first of all, do you really want to put in your bylaws a way to amend your articles, which then will affect your bylaws?
Yes.
It's kind of like bootstrapping genetic engineering, you know.
Please.
What I'm hearing you saying, Dave, are you saying that we should just take out Section 2, talking about amendments of articles of incorporation, or is that what you're fundamentally
saying? I think that it's required, if not by law, but by common sense, that a corporation retain the power to amend its articles of incorporation. In fact, you're required to be able to do so, at least for certain mundane housekeeping purposes. But you need to be able to maintain self-determination. However, I think it should be a very, very high threshold to alter a set of articles of incorporation that have stood us pretty darn well for the last 50 years.
My question to you is, what particular language or provisions would you want to see?
I would say that these bylaws may be amended, and by whatever terms this body would agree, except that the bylaws constraining an alteration of the articles cannot be modified except by an affirmative vote of 75% of the then seated directors and ratification by two-thirds vote of at least three of the five labs, or three-fifths of all labs if there's more than five of them.
Oh,
that sounds complicated, I know, but I'm a lawyer, so I can't do things simply.
But the fact is
you need to have a higher threshold in order to be able to alter that bylaw which permits amendment of the articles.
Okay.
Because it changes the mission, potentially.
Carol?
We're about protecting the mission.
Well, I want to... We've got several items on the table here that are under discussion. Amendment of the bylaws, amendment of the articles. And,
right, let's do them one at a time.
And I'd like to talk about amendment of the bylaws for a minute. I think that there ought to be two ways to amend the bylaws. I think not all bylaws amendments need to be approved by the members. I think it could really, really hamstring the foundation. For instance, if a quorum doesn't bother to vote because they don't understand it and don't care, if we want to change the annual meeting from March to May or something like that. I think that the board of directors should have the power, perhaps requiring ratification of the local board, to make any amendment of the bylaws that doesn't materially adversely affect the rights of the members. That sounds vague to people. What is a material adverse effect on the rights of the members? But actually, when it comes up, it's very clear. I think we should not require the members to ratify every bylaws amendment. However, I think the members should have the power to propose bylaws amendments as specified here and get them before the board and before the rest of the members if the members want to propose a bylaws amendment. So that's my theory of bylaws.
Okay, can we just stick to the bylaws question? Yeah, Rob?
I think I'm agreeing with Carol. My perspective on this is I'm not sure whether this is the final form that we should take on the bylaws or on the articles of incorporation. But I think this is one area where members, where your concerns about how we protect the corporation from takeovers needs to be spelled out carefully. And my sense is that one of the things that we should do is make sure that we get, you know, some input from the lawyer on how effectively we can provide the members with protections against facile changes in the bylaws that are likely to result in the change of the mission, but also not hamstring the board in conducting its business. And I also think that it's wonderful for members to be able to propose changes to the bylaws. All of the wisdom about Pacifica doesn't emanate from people that sit on this side of the microphone. So
oh, I'm sure.
I, I don't know if this is the correct language. It may be too complicated and torturous, but I think we're doing the right thing here, and I think that subject to legal review, we may have some good proposals on how to streamline some of these things so everyone understands how this process works clearly.
Okay, where are we? Is there something to vote on?
It's for the motion.
I'm sorry, there were two of you at once.
I'm saying, Carl, I suggest that Carl make a motion.
No, I don't want to make a motion, Robert.
No, I just said it's 4:30.
It's real clear?
I said it's 4:30.
Okay, it's 4:30. Thank you. So let's try and wrap this up, because we're supposed to be ending this agenda item at this time. Yeah, David?
I propose some rewording of that, which is on the page 27 of the draft that was adduced after the last meeting. I'm looking at the Article 17, Section 1, Sub A, power to amend, that was read by Leslie. To amend it to read as follows: these bylaws may be amended, altered, or repealed in whole or in part. Okay, that doesn't do it. I'm sorry. My point was, I was going to propose a language that only restricts the members' purview over the bylaws as to those which would seriously or materially affect their rights to vote.
Okay, let me just assist that. Do we have agreement on this approach? Obviously, it's not exact language. That the bylaws can be amended by the board of directors with a high threshold, whatever the number is, a high threshold, that only those bylaws that that are directly impact on the rights of members, should there be proposals to amend bylaws on those items that would in a negative way impact on the rights of members, would members have the right to vote on? All other bylaw amendments, just the board of directors could vote on. Again, high thresholds on both of them.
Supermajority.
Right? Do we agree on that concept, and we can work out the exact language?
Sounds good.
Is there agreement on that concept?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. Then the question is, do either the labs or the members need to ratify that action taken by the board of directors, or do they stand alone? You know. Yeah.
Well, the idea is that the members do not need to ratify unless it materially adversely affects the rights of the members. We might want to put a safeguard in there that the labs, 3 out of 5 labs, need to approve any bylaws changes at all. But I don't want to get us in a position where we're mailing out 100,000 ballots and nobody votes.
Right.
So would you suggest a bare majority of the within each lab, 3 out of 5 by majority to ratify?
Yeah, 3 out of 5 by majority of 3 out of 5 within 3 out of 5 of the local station boards, they would no longer be called labs, would have to ratify amendments to the bylaws. Membership would have to ratify, the entire membership would have to ratify any bylaw amendments that directly speak to and impact on the rights of members. Okay, with high thresholds and all these. Okay? I think they have agreement on that. Yeah, Jamari.
In the consolidated bylaws out of Houston, I would propose to just get rid of Article 16, which has to do with parliamentary procedure, and put that under
But let's go into the articles of incorporation.
Oh, I thought we had finished.
That was just on bylaw amendments. Now article of incorporation.
I thought you were talking about both of them.
Yeah. No, we did. We separated them.
But we didn't address the issue that the members can also propose bylaws amendments.
Yeah. Is there agreement that members can propose, members, or for that matter, I guess local station boards could propose that? Yeah, right.
And put it to a vote of the members.
What?
Isn't that what it says? Members can propose and it goes to a vote of the members.
What is that language?
Amendments may be proposed by 2/3 majority vote of the... No. A petition signed by 100 members.
Mm-hmm. The proposed changes shall be submitted to the
members. But why would they need to do that?
Well, you get a petition signed by however many members. That's not a vote of the members.
But that's a petition, right. Like, again, just on the principle that we're looking for, and we'll have to hammer this out later with the lawyer, is that there should be a mechanism with some threshold whereby members can directly propose bylaw amendments.
Okay, well, that's not what I was thinking.
Okay.
I was thinking the members can change the bylaws without the approval of the board of directors if enough of them vote for it.
Oh, I see. I guess
yeah.
I thought you meant proposing. Okay, so first we talk about one way to amend the bylaws. That is by the board of directors voting. Second is a proposal that members could initiate the process and vote
compel
on
amendments
to bylaws. Compel a vote on amendments to bylaws.
So that
on any subject, right?
Okay, let me understand this. So this comes bicameral. You have the board of directors and the members. Members being able to equally do what the board of directors would do.
Members are equal? What is this?
Yes.
Both? Oh, yeah.
Two different mechanisms.
Right,
okay.
But they both would be two different avenues or two different roads that could be traveled to amend bylaws. One is basically within the board of directors, and then the other is directly, you know, from the membership at large.
So it would be a petition from the members, right?
Yes. If enough members signed a petition saying we support and we want to vote on this bylaws amendment, let's say the national board, for reasons unknown, just had been asked and they said we don't like this bylaws amendment, the members could compel a vote of the members on it, is really what it would
be. There'd be a petition with some threshold.
So I'm trying to get clarity. So it would then go to the board of directors
for
a process? And once the petition is signed, and it would force the board of directors?
No, they could compel a vote of the members.
Okay, so they are compelling.
Yeah, they would compel a vote of the members.
Right. Okay, keep on saying the concept. Are we ready to vote on it?
So it's either 100 members petition or two-thirds, either a lab or the PNB. Calls for a national referendum of rights that will materially affect
3/5 of the land.
No, yeah, mixed up again. We already agreed on one way that bylaws could be amended is that the directors, right, with like 3/4 of the directors with the
approval of labs,
with the approval of a majority of at least 3 of the 5 labs or local station boards. What? That's one way. We already agreed on that. Now we're talking about a second way. A second way is that, let's say it's 100, whatever the final number is, 100 members can sign a petition for this bylaw amendment, right? That would kick, if that happens, that kicks into the process, that it ignites a process by which the full membership gets to vote on that proposed bylaw change. Okay,
sure.
That's what we're voting on now, whether or not we want to include that second way to do it.
If I may, I would be very concerned that there be, similar to that imposed upon the national board, that there be a supermajority requirement imposed upon the listener voting on this before I would support the notion of
yes.
the listeners being able to amend.
Okay, I think on all of these we're talking about high thresholds.
Supermajorities.
Right, supermajorities. Okay, we didn't say the exact number here, but
sure.
High,
yeah,
you know, 3/4 something. Right?
Supermajority.
I would tend to not favor that because I think it makes the bylaws unnecessarily complex. But you know, I'm thinking, you know, I'm envisioning this thing operating with people who are working under this new system, who have elected a national board, who have and operational station boards in place. And if we're doing what we're supposed to do and the people are concentrating on the mission, you're not messing with the bylaws in the first place. So what I think the first way gives is a process, a channel, because even though it's the directors, it's not like the directors are isolated and working on their own. They're getting whatever they're getting from the from
right.
everybody. You know, they're there to represent. And it's not like all of a sudden, you know, they didn't know about it because they're going to LSB meetings and they're not sequestered away from everybody. I'm just leery, because what this really says is people still don't trust the process.
Right.
You know, it really says people still don't trust the process. And at some point, we got to give the process a chance. And we got to give the people who become the emissaries of the process, you know, a chance to make the process work. And so I really, on a philosophical basis, I don't think this is necessary. And we can always add it if you really think later on down the road. But I think we have a process where people can make their issues known, work it through the system, and eventually get it to a people without creating this you know, this unnecessary duality.
If I can point out, Chair, that what I believe this contemplates is that such a proposal as derived from the petition of members would not cause a whole new election, but rather would just be added in on those annual elections that are going to occur anyway. So it's not as though it creates a whole new bureaucracy or mechanism. So you send out the ballot at each of the five signal areas. You say, oh, by the way, Jabari and 99 of his friends put up this bonehead proposal, and they want you all to vote on it. And bingo. Or, I'm sorry, Jabari. I mean, see, Dave Furtig and 100 of his friends. But the point is that it's a simple thing. It doesn't really add that much. But it does add a lot in the context of ensuring that the listeners are still able to get the voice onto and into the governance process independent of the rest.
And I understand that. But my concern is at any time, any group of people, whether it be 5 or 500, could get together and write up a petition because they have a concern. And there's absolutely nothing to ever stop them to do that. And if they get 500 people and 1,000 people or whatever number it is, the board of directors will you know that this is an issue. The LSB that it comes from will know that this is an issue. So, I mean, I see this as an unnecessary extra avenue that is just going to clog us down.
James?
Yeah, at first I was against this. But then I started to think about it, and I realized that this is simply a referenda.
Yes.
Of the people saying, this is what we want to move on.
Right.
So the notion that to vote against this basically says that you don't believe in referenda, and you don't believe in the vote of the
That's
people.
That's correct.
So I'm pretty much voting in agreement with this piece.
Yes.
If I could,
I call the question.
I actually do have some problems with referendums as they now exist in this country, but that's another story. Because of the money involved and, you know, because of how that all plays out. I do think that if we're going to do this, we need to put some more safeguards into it. For instance, I think it needs to be for more than one signal area. I think it needs to be more than 100 people. You know, I think that the threshold on that also needs to be higher. Because, I mean, really, getting 100 people together to sign a petition on, you know, it's not that hard to do, really. And we could just really be, even if it's integrated in, to the ballot system, it could lead to some serious confusing changes in bylaws. So I want to make it hard to change bylaws. This is what I said from day one. I want bylaws, and I'm not sure I'm getting them, but that are simple and easy and clear to understand, and that are hard to change, right? And so if there's going to be, but I do also think that there have to be, this is one of those checks and balances kind of questions. So I think that's right, but it needs to be a high threshold, just as the other mechanism needs to have a high threshold. So I think it was Carol and Rob.
I think the kinds of things that listeners generally want to hold referenda on are not structural governance issues, the kinds of structural things that belong in bylaws. What listeners, when you talk to them and find out what they're concerned about programming. And programming doesn't belong in bylaws. So I wouldn't want to see our bylaws end up looking like the California Constitution, where anybody who wants to can qualify to put a constitutional amendment before the voters, and we have a constitution about yay long, a lot of which is never applied or read. So I'd like to make the bar high, but I think that our members ought to be able to change our governance structure with petitions, maybe 500 signatures out of 3 out of 5 signal areas, or something big that would be a real effort to do.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I was just saying that I think for the most part we're on the same page. Most of the amendments I would think that would come from the public could be viewed by the board as friendly amendments. And there would not be the necessity of putting stuff to a referenda if the board says, oh, that's a good idea, why didn't we think of that? Well, we'll pass it anyhow. And then maybe somebody will say, no, I wanted it to be a referendum, but I don't think that's necessary. My sense is that one of the things we can do in instructing the attorney to review these is to say, could you suggest what is the best way to protect, you know, the sanctity of the mission, and also to protect the rights of members to participate, but that will not turn Pacifica into a referendum ridden organization, much like the state of California has become around some very divisive issues. And then we'll see what kind of language we get back, and then we'll vote on that, and obviously we'll ask for assent on that. But I don't think we're going to be able to vote on the final structure of that right now.
Can I just test where we are? No, I can't. George?
Yeah, well, we need to be really more responsive, I think. I think it's, you know, if a lot of folks feel a certain way, and they aren't, for example, members of the lab, or it's, let's say, a minority of the lab, and there are a lot of folks in the community who feel a certain way, we need to be able to hear those folks. And this is the mechanism. And I think it's a mistake not to approve this.
Well, that's what I wanted to test if we have agreement on that.
I think it flies in the face of the democracy that we all embrace if you all vote against this.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is a proposal that there be a way to amend the bylaws that includes, again, without coming to agreement on the details right now, a high threshold of people, members who get petitions signed in more than one city, from more than one signal area, that would kick into, by so doing, would kick into motion a membership-wide referendum or vote on that bylaws change. And again, it would need a high threshold to change, just as in the other way. Is there agreement on that? Or how many people agree on that?
In general.
Yeah, general. Write the details down. One. Is it your hand up, Jabari?
Jabari's
hand is up. We have agreement. Okay. Okay, great. Now on the amendment to the Articles of Incorporation, and we are running behind schedule now. The proposal, as was on page 23 of 23, is to propose amendments to the Articles of Incorporation. You would do it this way. Amendments to the Articles of Incorporation may be proposed by 2/3 majority votes of the board of directors, or by a petition signed by 100 members. To approve those changes, any amendments to the Articles of Incorporation proposed by the board of directors shall be presented to the members of the foundation by mail ballot, and shall require approval of whatever the number is, a high threshold, majority of a quorum of the members. I don't see it. Am I misreading this? Is this paragraph after that the same?
You don't need to. I took that paragraph out because it's superfluous.
It's the same, right?
It's superfluous. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So again, the process would be amendments to the articles would be proposed by 2/3 majority of the board of directors would have to agree, or a petition signed by 100 members to amend the articles of incorporation, or whatever the numbers are, right? Once that happens, then the actual approving of such an amendment to the Articles of Incorporation would be done by a mail ballot, and will require, again, a high threshold number of the majority of the members voting.
Chair, yes. Dave Furta here, KPFK. I would really urge that we raise the bar both on the amendment of any bylaw that permits the change of the Articles of Incorporation, and ensure that whatever supermajority be required be higher than the supermajority required for change of the bylaws.
Okay, does everybody agree on that? That to change the Articles of Incorporation, we would need a higher supermajority than to change the bylaws. So if the bylaws requirement is 2/3, then the Articles of Incorporation requirement would be 3/4. Is my math right? or something. You get the idea, right? That it's harder to change the articles of incorporation. Everybody agrees with that.
And also the bylaws provide that that bylaw providing that not be amendable except for by that higher supervisor.
I have no idea what you're saying.
Okay, trust me on that one, that's all.
Okay.
What he's saying is that if it takes three quarters to amend vote to amend the articles, you can't change that bylaw requiring the three-quarters vote except by a three-quarters vote.
Okay,
where
fine.
Other bylaws
okay,
you could
so
change by a two-thirds.
In. That will have to go in there, too. And then what about the process? The process is that some supermajority of the board has to vote on it or a petition signed by X number of members and then a ballot, mail ballot, to all the membership with a high threshold.
Yeah.
Vote, right? We agree on that?
Yeah.
As a process? Okay. This is the agreement. Fine. The final section is on a special, on a bylaws convention, which we had, I thought there was basically agreement in this body that we do want to have, that we do want to recommend to the next board, the new board that comes in, that they set a date and establish how a bylaws review convention would happen. And I thought we already agreed on that. Now, therefore, does that have to be in these bylaws?
No. I was going to, that's what I was going to say. You
right.
don't need to do that.
We agree.
Right. So, what we will need to do, not today, but at some point between now and the end of our term, is formalize that proposal to pass on to the next board. But so, can we agree? Yeah.
Apologies from the secretary, but we passed a binding resolution. The resolution was that the next board will hold the bylaws convention with no later than 3 years after their seating.
Oh, okay.
But we don't have to have.
So we don't have to have this.
Don't
need this. So this in the we don't need this in these bylaws.
Right. Exactly.
No, we passed. We already passed this resolution.
Right.
Okay. So this is out. So we are done.
Oh.
Article 16.
Yeah.
What was
it? It's just a one little. It's on parliamentary procedure.
Yeah.
And that only affects. That's only has to do with your meeting. So I moved it into the part of the rules for meetings. You know, that's all to say that your meeting shall be run under Robert's Rules of Orders.
Okay, Carol.
Every model bylaws that exists that I have ever seen put out by any organization has this article in it. It's just there. It is always the penultimate article, the second to the last, just before how to amend the bylaws. If we're going to...
I put it in the meeting.
I think we should leave it in.
Let me just actually on this. I was going to raise it, but since it's come up, you know, I'm not going to. It's not a matter of big principle to me. I'm not going to hold up the whole bylaws process over this. But
yeah.
I actually wouldn't put this in. Certainly not like that. I think we should be striving toward consensus to the degree possible. And I think that there are certainly advantages to Robert's rules. Mostly their advantage, those advantages come to play when people actually know what Robert's Rules are, and so that everybody is working with them in the same way, and some people aren't manipulating them, and others are ignoring them, etc. So I'm not saying that Robert's Rules have no place and shouldn't be a kind of fallback position for us or whatever, but I actually, I just want to go on record here as saying that I would hope that in the rebuilding of Pacifica, that on the board level, as a local station board level, in committees, whatever, that we strive to reach consensus on issues.
Leslie, are you proposing language?
Huh?
Are you proposing language?
You would?
No, are you proposing language?
No, I'm not proposing language, but I'm wondering if we need to put this in this way.
Yes.
Go on.
Yes, we very much do. Robert's Rules comes in handy. Especially when there are deep divisions and people don't know how to proceed and they don't know how to run a meeting fairly. But anybody that is governed by Robert's Rules can vote to suspend the rules at any time and operate in a more informal way. And that's often appropriate, and that's what we are de facto doing most of the time here. But in the event that there is a major controversy, Robert's rules protect everybody. And I think we should,
I guess the kind of language I would propose, and again, don't hold me to this exact wording, but something that we shall seek consensus when not possible, Robert's rules shall be used. No, I don't think it's the work of the devil if there is a fallback position. Again, I don't want to hold up this whole process. I don't want to hold it up today. I just wanted to air it.
No.
So is there a proposal? I'm not making a proposal. Someone else made a proposal. Yeah.
I propose that we leave the section on Robert's Rules of Order in as the penultimate article, as appears in the document that we just discussed.
So second.
Second. Okay, can we vote on that? Okay, all in favor, raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Is that a yes?
Doesn't matter to me. I'll
seven.
Vote yes.
Yeah, I don't know if that. Yeah, I guess that's 8. And all opposed, 1. And all abstaining, 1. Okay, so now we're done. Right, with the bylaws part of today. So we are running late. We should be, according to the agenda right now, we should be 12 minutes into a discussion about race and nationality. We were supposed to take a break. I would propose that we not take a break, if that's okay. And that if people individually need a break, people have been doing it, getting up and leaving the table. So we can just keep forging ahead.
Best reminder, you're listening to the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting at the All Souls Unitarian Church here on WPFW in Washington, D.C., WBAI in New York, KPFK in Los Angeles, KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley, and KFCF in Fresno.
On race and nationality. And what the next steps are in that work, and then the affiliates. And we were given a report earlier today on some work that was done on the affiliates. And I think we need, I suggested 45 minutes for each of those agenda items. We definitely need to end by 6:30.
It's 5:05.
It's 5 o'clock now. If we could end a little bit earlier, if we could do either of these a little bit shorter, that would be great. At 6:30, there is a food coming here, and there will be music, and I don't know, maybe some heaters are coming.
Again, this is the second day of the 3-day Interim Pacifica National Board meeting.
Because the person who is making the presentation on that needs to leave soon. So, if that's okay, folks, if everyone can hang in there. So, it's 5 o'clock. Let's see how quickly we can move through this. On the affiliates. No, I just suggested, you weren't listening, obviously, that the person who's presenting material to us on the affiliates has to leave shortly. So I want to reverse the order. Okay? Okay, so is Ursula in the room? Where's Ursula? Okay.
While we're waiting for this to happen, we'll tell you again that they have reversed 2 items here in this last few hours, last couple of hours of the board meeting. They'll have the affiliates discussion next, and then that will be followed with the ongoing work on race and nationality throughout the network to wrap the meeting up around 6:15 or 6:30 East Coast time and 3:15 or 3:30 West Coast time. Tomorrow we'll hear from the personnel committee, and then there'll be the station reports from all 5 stations, WPFW, WBAI, KPFK, KPFA, and KPFT. Then there'll be a lunch break, and during that lunch break we'll play back some material from today, and we'll have a report from the Pacifica Archives and a proposal, and then any items that are left over from the weekend before the adjournment at 3 o'clock Eastern or perhaps around 12 o'clock West Coast time. So we wanted to give you that. If you are thinking of coming to the meeting tomorrow and you're in Washington, D.C., it's the All Souls Unitarian Church, 1600 Harvard Street Northwest, the Adams Morgan section of Washington, D.C. at the inner of 16th Street and Columbia Road.
And at some point along the way, I don't remember the exact timing of this, the national staff, Dan Coughlin, hired Ursula Rudenberg out of New York to come on to do a project. He was hired to do a short-term project with us on the affiliate.